All right, let's be real. What has been the hardest thing about your pregnancy and postpartum journey? Is it the postpartum painful sex that nobody talks about? What are you supposed to do with that? Is it the fact that you might have torn during delivery and you have no idea how to heal now that you're in postpartum? Welcome to the Onas podcast, where we bring on mothers, parents, and pregnant postpartum individuals to talk about their journey and their experiences to give that knowledge back to people that need it. And we are also attached to theonascollaborative.com, which is a free online educational directory where we help moms and parents connect to maternity care providers in their local area. We are here to give the power back to you guys so you have a choice in your journey. We'll have space for midwives, doulas, pelvic floor PTs, massage therapist. And as we continue expanding, we hope that we can support you. All right, we hope you enjoy this podcast. Welcome back to the Onas podcast. My name is Erin and I am your host and also the founder of the Onas Collaborative. Today we have an exciting guest on. Her name is Amanda and she is from the west coast of the US. She is an endometriosis warrior, a mother, partner, pelvic floor PT, entrepreneur, and you're going to learn so much today. We're talking about her birth story, her experience with endometriosis, where she's at now, and even some of the offerings that she has with her services as a pelvic floor PT. So we're super excited and we hope you all enjoy this episode.
I went into surgery being told I wouldn't get I might not be able to keep my ovaries because my cysts were so large. And then when I came out of surgery, they were like, yay, you have your ovaries, but you need to get pregnant now or you will probably never have kids. Like, it's just going to come right back.
Well, you had endometriomas.
Yeah. I have stage 4. So I had the chocolate cysts. I had everything. And my options then were get pregnant. And I was not in a time in life where I wanted to get pregnant, nor was I with someone I wanted to have a baby with. And so it was either get pregnant, get Lupron. And I did my research on Lupron and was like, heck no. And so then I chose to do hormonal birth control. Mm-hmm. But I was on straight birth control, so no sugar pills, for almost five years. Wow. No period.
Yeah.
And then met my husband, decided that we we're going to start trying. And a little bit before that, I had started doing more research, having been in pelvic floor world and getting more immersed in the fact that there were more options. Mm-hmm. And just then started doing all the steps I could to prepare my body. Got off birth control in January and was pregnant in April.
That's amazing. Yeah. So if we go back, what actually led you to surgery?
So early 2015, I started getting this severe lower abdominal pain to the point that I thought maybe it was my appendix. Like, it was so bad. And so I went in and had a CT scan because the doctor was like, yep, sounds like your appendix. Let's get you in. And they found super large ovarian cysts. So I actually just went into surgery to get these cysts removed because they were not like, they weren't dying. They were just growing and growing to the point that you could actually see them through my stomach. Like, I had lumps in my lower abdomen. Wow. And so they were like, okay, we've got to remove them. And then when they went in to remove them, they, oh, and you have severe endo.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, like, where else did they find endo?
Well, I don't want to say everywhere because it wasn't everywhere, but my bowels were stuck to my uterus, and then my ovaries were stuck to my uterus as well. So everything was just kind of clumped there. Yeah. And then it was just inside my entire abdominal cavity.
Wow. And did you have symptoms before that?
You know, I never really had bad periods. Mm-hmm. Growing up, they never stopped me from doing anything. I never, you know, I had friends who would stay home from school and all of that. And I didn't until all of a sudden that lower abdominal pain. And I even asked, like, why now? And they said, well, your cyst probably just grew then to the size that all of a sudden your body was like, ugh, straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah.
And then started causing the pain.
Yeah. No, because when I talked to my surgeon, she said one of the things she has noticed, which they've noticed in other things, obviously it's not the definite because we know that symptom doesn't align with like severity. But she was thinking in her practice that she had figured out a lot of people who had stage 4 had less symptoms. And she was thinking it was because they had more endo wrapped around their nerves. So like they were lacking that communication to have like bad periods and ovulation pain and stuff like that, which is really interesting. Yeah.
That is interesting because I've always known it doesn't correlate.
Yeah.
But you would think like, okay, the worst must be the worst.
You would think. But then there's some people with stage 1 and like they're in excruciating pain and then they go in and they're like, yeah, you just had a little bit in this spot. And you're like, are you kidding me? Because it's in so much pain. Yeah. So you ended up having surgery. They dealt with the endometriosis and then that led you to the hormonal birth control.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. And how did you feel on the hormonal birth control?
I felt great as far as like no lower abdominal pain. And again, at that point, not having done my research, not knowing any better, I was like, this is awesome. Like no period and, you know, no pain, but looking back, it's like, oh my gosh, the mood swings, even though I wasn't getting a period and the fatigue and the lack of energy and just hair, skin, nails, just everything. Looking back, I'm like, that was probably because my hormones were just not functioning.
Yeah. They're just like, there's still so much going on. Yeah.
But I was so happy to not be in pain that I didn't care. But looking back, if I could do it again, even though I have Sloan, you know, everything, I would probably try to do it without knowing what I know now.
Yeah. But no one gives us that information. We find it out later.
Yes. And that's why, you know, being a provider who can speak both as someone who's done research and someone who's lived it, to be able to share, you know, pros and cons and be a source of information versus just, oh, you've got endo or you're crazy or, you know.
Yeah. Like you have endo and that's it. Like there's nothing I can do for you. Yeah. That's what I found a pelvic floor PT here the other week and that's pretty much all she told me. She was like, yeah, I mean, you just have endo, so like, there's really nothing I can do. You should really just get excision. Okay, I'll find a provider out of the U.S. Because I was like, I know that there's still so much you can do. So So you said when you decided you wanted to get pregnant, you started doing research and taking those steps to like lead up to pregnancy. So what were some of those steps like?
So one of my biggest steps was finding all of the toxins that I was using and eliminating them. So everything from the shampoo that I used to removing the little blue strips in the razor, like literally every single thing I could find I was doing. Yes. Oh, those are just full.
Really?
Yeah. And so then unless you want to buy like the super fancy ones that you like have the removable razor, yep, you just can pick that out with like a toothpick or a tweezers.
Awesome.
Because you figure you're shaving and then you're opening up all your pores.
Yeah, yeah. It's going right in there. I didn't even think of that. Brilliant.
Yeah. And then I met and worked with a functional nutritionist. We did the autoimmune protocol to figure out what was maybe causing my inflammation and my issues in my body, and gluten was a big one for me. Cool. So I eliminated gluten. And then just also like got my mind right. I knew that stress would highly, inhibit my ability to get my hormones back to normal. So, my husband and I were also both very interested in, adoption. Mm-hmm. And so we actually started the adoption process at the same time, that we were going to start trying, because we figured, well, then we'll end up with a little one either way. And so it was just so much more stress-free. There wasn't that like okay, every month you feel let down or anything like that. It was just, okay, you know, if it happens, great. If it doesn't, we're in the process. So that I also feel like was really huge. It just took all the stress off. There wasn't any, I mean, I tracked my cycle religiously, but there wasn't any sort of urgency there or, oh my gosh, we must, you know. So,
like, you were really content with either or happening. Like, you were supporting your body either way. And you're like, either way, we're going to end up with a child and we're not going to stress about it, because that's one of the biggest things that play into our hormones. And we see a lot of people, they're like, oh, I'm not getting pregnant. And then when they stop stressing about it is when, like, things start to take off. Yeah. I love that. And so you found with, like, the autoimmune protocol and, you know, eliminating the toxins from your environment around you and the mental side of things really, really helped.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do really attribute working with the functional nutritionist to a lot of that. I started working with her literally like 3 days after I got off birth control. And she was so great because she was very open about not knowing a ton about endometriosis. But when she met me, then she did a lot of research and I voiced to her my research and, you know, wanting to eliminate inflammation and wanting to get hormone balance. And then she kind of helped me take it from there. And I really stood up for myself. She wanted me to get on all of these supplements. And I told her, I was like, I'm sorry, I cannot afford to pay $400 a month in supplements. I said, tell me how I can get this through my food. And so she really then empowered me to do that research as well. And so it was just an all around really cool experience. And I'm very excited. I still have yet to get my period since having Sloan because I'm breastfeeding. Yeah. But when I do get it, I plan on trying the AIP again to see if my body has changed at all.
Yeah.
Because I am a little bit nervous about it possibly coming back.
That's fair enough. Yeah. When you had the surgery, do you know if you had excision or ablation?
I had excision.
Okay, so you had a really good surgeon. Okay, love that. And if you don't mind me asking, what is your diet like now since doing the autoimmune protocol? Has it changed much?
So when I got pregnant, I honestly then was kind of like, cool.
Yeah.
I got what I needed and kind of just ate whatever sounded good to me. Gluten is still something I eat very, very little of.
Yeah.
But this girl needs pizza every once in a while. Yeah. But overall, I eat a very paleo diet in general.
Yeah.
But again, now with the thought of, okay, I'm going to be having a period now for a while again. I plan on when I go through it again, being a lot more strict than with the results once I get them for the long term.
Yeah. Well, hopefully the next period will be good. How old is Sloan?
She will be 6 months here in the month of July.
Okay. Well, hopefully the next period goes well. Most people that I talk to, they say usually after birth, it gets better. But
yeah.
Yeah. And as you're starting to make those steps to get there, that should help as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you want to tell us a little bit about your pregnancy and birth?
Yeah. So I don't know if we have mentioned yet, but I'm a pelvic floor physical therapist. And so I went into pregnancy being like, yes, I know all the things. And overall, I had a super smooth pregnancy. Anytime I would get SI joint pain or back pain or anything, I was able to say, okay, this is why I'm having it, and do some exercises and overall eliminate it. As far as endometriosis goes, the biggest complication I had was my scarring. In my first trimester, which is super odd because I didn't even start to show until my second, but my first trimester, I had the sharpest pain around my incisions. To the point where, like, if I would cough or sneeze, there's a few times it sent me to the floor. Wow. And I'm someone who doesn't tend to, I think those with endometriosis, we have a fairly high pain tolerance. And so for that to knock me out, I knew I knew right away what it was. So again, went back to my knowledge, did some fascial mobilization, a little bit of cupping, and that really helped that. But otherwise, pregnancy was so, so smooth. Thank goodness. Mm-hmm. I worked with a midwife and a doula, and yeah, my water broke on a Thursday afternoon, and I had my girl Sloan at home on a Saturday. I did a home birth. Hi. Yes. Okay. And it was awesome.
Yeah.
My biggest fear came true. I was super afraid of tearing, not only for my body, but also for my ego. I was like, I can't tear. I'm a pelvic floor PT. No one's going to listen to me then if I tear. Yeah. But I suffered a grade 3, almost a grade 4 perineal tear. Had to be taken to the hospital after I had Sloan at home to get stitched up. Yeah. But I feel like already 5 months postpartum, it's made me such a better clinician, understanding now what everyone's going through and the healing process and the slow return to function. It was so great. I loved a home birth for a million reasons, and I loved working with a doula for just as many reasons.
I love that. Okay, I have so many questions. So first question, how were labor pains compared to endo pain?
Labor pains were very similar. For me, it was just that sharp, when is this over? Yeah. You know, kind of thing. But the good thing was you had something to kind of put behind it. You were like, okay, I'm getting a baby at the end of this versus why is this happening to me? Why am I laying on the bathroom floor curled up for the third time this week? Yeah. So I considered them very similar, as far as like the placement of them, where you feel them, and the type of pain. I would describe it very similarly. I think birthing pain is a little bit more intense.
Okay.
But same place, same type in my opinion.
Okay. Good to know. Cause I'm always curious. I'm like, some people are like, no, it's worse than endo pain. Some people are like, it's better than endo pain. So I'm always curious. And then my other question for you was, why did you decide on a home birth, and was home birth supported amongst like your partner and your family around you?
Yeah. So I wanted a home birth for a lot of reasons. First of all, I wanted to know that my well-being was going to be put first, not someone else's schedule or timeline. I wanted to be heard. I wanted my medical history to be taken into account. And then finally, my biggest one was just wanting that freedom to like move about my house, be able to labor in my tub, my shower, my couch, go to my fridge, like just have everything that makes me comfortable and happy accessible. And then I also loved the idea, not knowing that I was going to be rushed to the hospital. I loved the idea of then just like cuddling up with my family right away at home, which we still did get to do. And just there's something magical. I wrote an Instagram post about this not that long ago. There's something magical about living your every day in the place that you brought your child into the world. Like every day I get to look at that spot in my living room and think, that's where my girl was born.
Yeah.
It just kind of makes the mundane extraordinary.
Yeah, I love that. And I feel like I've interviewed a few people who have done home births, and they say like the ability to like get up and move around, to be in your own space, but also like the end point where they literally just put you in your bed and tuck you all in and then they leave. That seems to be like everyone's like selling point, like that end of it. You just all get in bed, they tuck you in, make sure you have your food and water, and then they leave. And it's just like,
yeah.
Can birth really be like that? And it can be.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and we didn't do that just because, again, I rushed to the hospital, and I had Sloan at like noon. And so by the time everybody was leaving, which by the way, get a doula, I went to the hospital. And then when I came home, my house looked like nothing had happened that day. Laundry was done. Everything was cleaned up. Tub was put away, drained, everything. But when we got home, my parents were here and had pizza.
Oh, that's awesome.
And we all just hung out and just fawned over her and talked about the day. And especially with COVID, having a baby during that, knowing that I wouldn't have been able to have everyone there, you know, even after. It was just my husband and I and the birth team when I had her, but I wanted my family to be able to come over really quickly after.
Yeah.
And then as far as support, the people closest to me were very supportive. My husband's kind of like a you do you girl kind of thing. So he was super supportive. My family was supportive, but funny enough, it's like the strangers. It's the strangers who are like, is that smart? You know, are you being safe? Some patients of mine had their own input. But I was pretty adamant from the beginning of wanting a home birth. And what I loved about the midwife group that I went through was you had the option then to, if for whatever reason, the home birth ended up not working, you could also go to their birth center.
Great, which is a good option.
Yeah.
Yeah. And for your doula, was your doula already networked in with the midwife, or did you find your doula separately?
I found my doula separate. A friend of mine had had a baby a few months earlier, and I was voicing, oh, I think I kind of want a doula, and she recommended the person that I went with and met with her via Zoom. Again, thank you, COVID.
Yeah.
And I loved her from the very beginning. I knew that we would be a good fit. So, yep, she came onto the birth team, and we were so happy to have her.
Did you have her postpartum as well?
I did. Oh my gosh. And I even did like, so she had the option where like she just comes for the birth and then a few appointments before and a few appointments after. Mm-hmm. I chose an option that had a little bit more support afterwards, mainly because not being able to breastfeed and pain with breastfeeding was a big fear of mine.
Okay.
And so she had a little bit more of a specialty in lactation. And so she came in the day after I had Sloan, the day after that, and then once a week for about three to four weeks mm-hmm. to check in with me, check in with how's pumping going, how's everything going. And again, I could not recommend it enough. Like, I hear women complain about pain with breastfeeding, and I'm so blessed to say, like, I don't know what that is, you know, and I attribute it all to my doula, who was like, nope, we're getting this from the beginning. We're doing this. So I would have a doula a million times over, and I would pay 10 times more to have one again if I ever needed it.
Yeah. I've never heard anyone say, I regret having a doula. I often hear people say, I regret not having a doula. So yeah, I love that. And so with your postpartum appointments, did you see your midwife before the 6 weeks?
Yeah, my midwife came the next day to check both Sloan and I. Then she came at 1 week and 2 weeks. And then I went in at 6 weeks.
That's amazing, being checked on. I think that's the other reason people like home birth, is because typically midwives who do home births are willing to come in during that first 6 weeks, which is so important.
Yeah.
Like,
yes,
we live in this system where it's like, oh, we'll see you once at 6 weeks and that's it. And it's like,
right.
It does not make sense.
Well, and as a physical therapist, again, who pelvic floor is my main thing that I treat. It's probably like 95% of my patient load, but I also treat backs and necks and hips and post-ops. And if you had a shoulder repair or a knee repair, there is no way your doctor would let you go 6 weeks. Like, no way. They're following up with you at the 1 week mark, the 2 week mark. You're going to PT immediately. Yeah. Yet with birth,
there's
nothing. Yeah. And then they're like, oh, and take care of this human while you heal on your own.
Good luck.
Yeah. It's so backwards. And I would really love to see the narrative changed. And well, I don't necessarily treat women within those first 6 weeks. I like them to be cleared by their doctor before they see me. But a lot of them I'm seeing before they have their baby, and I'm really empowering them, like, seek the care, get the inpatient appointments, demand to have your perineum and your vulva and your vagina looked at, demand to have your C-section scar looked at, because sadly it's just not happening.
No, it's not. Like, as a pelvic floor PT, you must see that so much.
I see it a lot. Oftentimes I am the first person to look at someone's vulva and vagina after they've had a baby. And I can sometimes be the first one to say, wow, you have a huge hormone imbalance going on here. Like, their skin is just brittle and red. And
right. It was you were talking to someone about how you can see the hormone imbalances, and then I was like, what, can you really? And that's when I reached out to you. Yes, can we talk about this? It's so interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's talk about it. Tell me all about it. Yeah.
whenever I'm treating a patient and they consent to an external vaginal exam, I do an external before I do an internal. The first thing I do is look at a patient's skin, because if it's white or lacy, or just, you can tell it's not getting good blood flow. That can often be a sign of low estrogen. It can be a sign of lichen sclerosis or a yeast issue. And all of that is going to affect the pelvic floor. If your skin is irritated and upset, your muscles are going to respond by cramping up. And so if we don't fix the skin, the rest is mute. Also, if the perineum isn't moving well, if there's been scarring or episiotomy or any sort of surgical intervention down there, everything else also isn't going to respond. So we have to look at how it's moving. Conversely, from the white skin, if someone's vulvar skin is extremely red, and you can just tell, like, it's fragile, it's easily irritated, it's being abrased with any sort of penetration, then that speaks as well. Those are people who may need some sort of, you know, help as far as their estrogen levels go as well. Unfortunately, estrogen is a big culprit to a lot of things.
Yeah.
But it's getting them that care to kind of start the process. Because again, if there's a skin issue, and unfortunately as a pelvic floor PT, I can identify it, but I can't prescribe for it per se. But to be able to identify it and say, hey, we need to fix this before we do anything else, because otherwise you're going to hit a brick wall.
Yeah.
And it's just so, so important. And again, it's insane how many postpartum women I see. And I say, did your doctor look down here? No. No, they just asked me what birth control I wanted to get on.
And do you find that many of the clients that you have, well, patients that you have coming in, have been referred to pelvic floor PT by their doctor, or is it because they're finding you on their own?
So I am currently a physical therapist at the Naval Hospital, at a Naval Hospital here in Washington. Mm-hmm. So the patients who want to see me are a very select group of people. They have to have the military insurance, and their doctor has to send them to me. Now, I have posters, I have stuff all over that darn hospital that basically say, tell your doctor you want to see me. yeah. And so a lot of them do come to their doctor and say, hey, there's a pelvic floor PT here and we want to see her. And so then the referral gets put in.
Yeah.
I did own a private practice for a little while as well as being at the hospital. It was one of the things that I stopped when I was getting ready to start a family, because I knew it would be a source of stress to work 60 hours a week.
Yeah.
But those people almost were all self-seeking or referred, like, by a friend kind of thing.
Yeah. That's the thing, is I wish seeing a pelvic floor PT in pregnancy and postpartum was just standard, because so many people still don't even realize it. Like my sister reaching out, and she's, you know, 4 years postpartum. My mom reaching out, who's obviously like almost 60, and she's like, hey, can like a pelvic floor PT help with this? I'm like, yes. I will help find one. Like, it's everyone, never
too late.
No, it's never too late. And it just makes me sad that it's not just standard practice. Like, if you've given birth, it doesn't hurt to go see a pelvic floor PT just to make sure everything's okay. Like, especially if you've torn, and so many people do tear, even if it's not a third degree, there is always still commonly some type of tearing. And so when it comes to getting pelvic floor PT for like tearing and even C-sections, I think that's a big one we should talk about as well. What does pelvic floor PT look like in helping with that?
Well, I always, again, unless a patient declines or it's contraindicated, do both an external and an internal vaginal exam. Because even if someone, let's just say someone has leakage, does not mean that their pelvic floor is weak. Yeah. It could be that their muscles are too tight to function. And so someone must assess these muscles before they just flippantly tell people to do Kegels. Because Kegels are not always the answer. And that's huge for people, especially with tears, because it's very likely that that skin was stitched maybe a little too aggressively because they want it to stay closed. And so then everything under that structure tenses up. And so a lot of what I do with almost all of my postpartum, but a lot of the people who have had tearing, we work on learning to relax those muscles, on mobilizing that tissue, on breathing into the pelvic floor so that it's mobile with every breath. Just getting those muscles to let go is half the battle. Once they're let go, then you can strengthen them. You can always strengthen them. But it's allowing those muscles to actually function. That's huge. I often describe it like a fist. My hand should be able to make a fist, but it shouldn't be stuck in a fist. If it's stuck in a fist, it's pain, it's dysfunctional, and it's weak. And the pelvic floor is no different. We do not want those muscles stuck. And unfortunately, tearing really can kind of speed that process or exacerbate that pelvic floor tightness process.
Gotcha. And is that mainly because when they're sewn back together, the scar tissue? The scar tissue down there, that affects that.
And it's just a traumatic experience. You know, and there's all different levels of perineal tearing and vulvar tearing and labial tearing. But scar tissue always causes adhesion wherever it is. And in my opinion, anyone who has any sort of surgery should have some sort of assessment done to their scar tissue to get it moving properly.
And this is what I was trying to explain to the pelvic floor PT here. I was like, I've had surgery and I really want something to help with the scar tissue. And she was just like, no, I think you just need to have surgery. That's not the, like, yes, I definitely need excision surgery at some point if it gets to that. I'm at this point, I feel like I'm trying to avoid surgery as much as I can because of the scar tissue that can come up with it. But I was like, I know that pelvic floor PTs can do a lot when it comes to scar tissue, so I'm going to find someone else.
And then C-section scar, you know, even it can be even more imperative because a lot of people see that scar on the top and they say, oh, that's not too bad. But you have to remember there are multiple scars underneath that. Some of them don't even run this way. Some of them run this way. And so this entire lower abdominal area can be adhesive. And then it can adhere to your bladder. We have a ligament that runs from our bladder to our belly button called the uracus. If that muscle has been cut through, which ding, 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 it has, it can cause that pain with bladder emptying. It can cause pain with the ovulation and the uterus contracting during periods. So it's so important that C-section scars are addressed and they get moving. You don't know how many patients are like, I don't even touch it. It just scares me. It's like, no, we need to touch it. We need to get it moving. Otherwise it can contribute to some very big issues down the road.
No, all of those are super important. And so for you postpartum, did you work with a pelvic floor PT or did you just do your own little thing?
I did. And I am, it was very important to me to practice what I preached. I did at first try everything I knew to do, but because of my tearing, I was still having pretty severe pain with intercourse. Okay. So I was like, nope, not going to live with this. I tell my patients not to live with this.
Yeah.
So I'm seeing a pelvic floor PT out in town. And she's helping me a lot. It's funny. She's telling me all the things that I know, but there's just something about hearing it from someone else that you're like, oh yeah.
It's getting that extra perspective. I'm the same way with nutrition, because I'll be like, no, I don't have an issue with that. And then someone else will be like, yes, you do. Let's talk about it. I'm like, okay, I know I do. I just need to accept it.
Yeah.
I love that. And so my other question for you, going back to motherhood, how are you doing postpartum now?
I'm overall doing very well. I have a great support system, and my daughter is the best, as I'm sure everyone says.
Yeah.
The biggest thing that I've experienced are like the intrusive thoughts. Mm-hmm. So I've never been one to be very anxious or anything like that, but like we'll be walking down the road and all of a sudden I'll be like, what if a car hits us?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, I'll picture dropping her or someone else dropping her. And it's something I honestly had never even heard about until I was living it. And then all of a sudden I heard everyone talking about it. It's funny how that works. So that's been kind of my biggest thing to overcome, because I do not want it to stop us from living life and enjoying all of the things that I just love watching her explore. So that's been the hardest part, as well as juggling. I am a multi-passionate woman, between home projects and this little side, I don't want to call it little, this side business that I have going, and being a full-time pelvic floor PT, you know, not letting that mom guilt creep in. Also being a wife, very important to me. So motherhood, I love. There's also the points of, like, you know, when you're super frustrated, like they're crying or they're not going to sleep. And maybe this makes me a bad person, but I've heard other people say this, so I'm just going to say it. You have moments that you're like, why did I do this?
Yeah.
Why did I do this? And then you feel even worse because you're like, oh my gosh, I have endometriosis. I shouldn't even have this person. Mm-hmm. Yet I'm thinking these, you know, these, oh man, should I not have had a baby thoughts? And you just spiral, like you spiral into this guilt and this shame and, but then it's just stopping and realizing, okay, that was a bad 5 minutes and we're on, which, you know, just that ability to pause and say, okay, that was a rough moment, but let's carry on.
Yeah, absolutely. And so what do you think brings you out of those moments?
Realizing that I'm a great mom and that I'm so happy that she's here, and that those bad times, those rough times, they always pass. Mm. They always, always pass. And there's way more good than bad. One of my tricks that I have learned to do is if there is a lot of crying or she's not going to sleep, I look at the clock, because I've learned to realize it might feel like they're crying forever.
Mm.
But then you're like, oh, that was 7 minutes.
Yeah, true.
And so just learning, like, okay, I can do anything for 5 minutes, 7 minutes, 10 minutes. That's really helped me get out of those like panicky, oh my gosh, what are we doing moments. It's just like, okay, it's 5 rough minutes, but 5 rough minutes are not going to ruin a whole day of being a mom to a really cool girl.
Amazing. And are you still on maternity leave?
I am not. Very lucky. The maternity leave, as I'm sure you know, here in the U.S. is not always the greatest.
Yeah.
But here in Washington State, it's actually not too shabby. So I was able to stay home for 5 months.
Really?
With Sloan while getting paid. Yeah.
Is that because of the hospital you work for?
Nope, not at all. It's the Family Medical Leave Act here in Washington.
That's amazing. Never heard that. Why doesn't every state adopt that?
Right?
Yeah.
It's new as of last year.
Okay, so it's fairly new.
Mm-hmm.
That's moving forward, though. That's pretty amazing for a state in the U.S.
Yes.
That's moving forward. Awesome. And also, I wanted to ask you, what's your small business?
So I own a little spot on the World Wide Web where I share online pelvic floor education with women. Mm-hmm. I have a website. It's makeandmanifest.com, if you don't mind me dropping that.
Oh, yeah, do it.
I also have a Facebook group, Make and Manifest, and I provide daily just education tips, and then every Friday I do like a little live video on something that someone has written in about that day. I'm also over on Instagram, but I let that be more of my little personal space. And I'm in the process of creating an online course to help women with bladder leakage. And that should be coming out around the end of the summer.
That's awesome. You'll have to send that over to me so I can post it on Ona's and like let people know. That's awesome. Yeah. So exciting. So you're doing a lot. You're very busy.
Very busy. And let me tell you, I personally feel like when you become a mom, you become very clear about who you are and what you want and where you want to spend your time. Like you lose all ability to handle BS. Like if someone invites you to something and you don't want to go to it, you say no real quick, real easy.
Yeah.
And so I've had this Make and Manifest, you know, site and place where I provide education. But when I became a mom, I was like, I need to do more with this. Like, this is my calling. And so I really buckled down in creating my online course. And it just felt so right for so many reasons. And that's been one of my favorite things about being a mom is I just feel so empowered. I'm like, if I can push a person out of me, I can do freaking anything. And it's just, empowering is the best way to put it.
I love that. No, it's amazing. And I'm just excited that you have all this stuff going on and also empowering others and yourself, like on this journey of motherhood, being a pelvic floor PT, being a wife and all the things.
Yeah. It's a true blessing.
Yeah, I love it. And I guess my last question for anyone on here, especially from the endo community, going into wanting to conceive, what would be your biggest advice or biggest tip?
My biggest advice would be do as much prep work as you can for your body and your mind. Give yourself grace. You know, do what you can in the season that you're in with what you have, and don't let stress get the best of you, because if you are worrying, if you are, you know, hoping and worrying, I really don't think that helps anything. So if you can just let go and know that you're doing everything you possibly can, that's the best you can do.
Yeah. Amazing. I love that. And I think it's really helpful for people out there that are kind of worried about starting that journey, but it is about, you know, really prepping yourself and prepping your body. If your body's in a stressful environment or you're like stressed mentally, it can make an impact on what's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing. And if people want to find you, where's the best place they can locate you?
So I am on Instagram at make.manifest. But as I said before, there you're more just going to see my really cute baby.
Yeah.
If you want all the good free pelvic floor info, I have a website, makeandmanifest.com. And I have a Facebook group. It's private. It is a place just where women can get help, share help with one another. And if you just Google if you look up Make and Manifest in the Facebook search bar, you'll find it.
Amazing. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on today. It was so good to finally sit down and have a chat about all of the things.
Yeah. So good.
Yes, and I hopefully we can find a way to like work together in the future. Maybe we can set up kind of like a workshop or something where you can come on and
That
help.
would be awesome.
That'd be
All
awesome.
of the women's health collaborating
Yeah,
together.
I love that. Maybe I'll think about doing something like that in the autumn. Yeah, think about it. We'll stay in touch.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Erin, for having me. I really appreciate it.
We want to thank Amanda so much for coming on today. It was so good to meet another person who has endo, has also, you know, managed to get pregnant, and what are the things she's done to do that, and also being a public floor PT and providing us education around that because it's so important. So if you do want to meet up with Amanda, you can actually find her in our directory at theonuscollaborative.com. But you can also reach out to her on Instagram at make.manifest if you are interested in reaching out to her. So thank you so much, Amanda, for coming on again. And if there's anyone out there, a mother or parent that would like to come on the podcast, feel free to DM us on Instagram at Onus Collaborative or send us an email at hello@theonuscollaborative.com. And if you're a provider looking to come on to also share information, go ahead and get signed up for our directory. It's completely free. And then shoot us an email at hello@theonuscollaborative.com and we'll get you all set up. All right. Thanks, guys. We'll see you next week. Bye.